Welcome, everyone, to a pre-recorded episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I'm Grace.
I'm David.
And today, as the senior staff of this podcast, we will be going on an away mission to a very dangerous planet, but I don't think it's going to work with just the three of us. We need some extras, you know, some people to help us out. So, you two in the red shirts.
What? Huh?
Yo!
Yes, you can come on this mission, and it will be completely safe, and for no other reason, you should get your affairs in order. Don't worry about it.
That sounds very reasonable. It sounds like a good career choice.
Sounds safe to me, boss. Aye.
Excellent. All right, so welcome both of you to the show. You are, in fact, Ashley Robinson and Jason Inman of the upcoming YouTube comedy series, The Red Shirt Diaries, correct?
And we are. And I'm Jason, obviously.
Yes.
Yo!
Transporter accident?
If you want to be politically correct about it, yes.
This is basically just Tuvix, I guess. We've skipped series.
Oh, please no.
All right, so for our listeners, what is the Red Shirt Diaries exactly? Explain it to us.
So the Red Shirt Diaries is an idea that I've had for quite a long time, and Jason was able to facilitate us doing this. It is a web series, and it's a reaction to the first 10 episodes as they are in order on Netflix of Star Trek, the original series. And so I created an original red shirt character. She's an ensign, a security officer, and she's recording her mission logs in reaction to all of the crazy stuff that goes on from the first to the 10th episode. And they're airing online, and they're about 3 minutes long, and they're fantastical.
And as I recall, the first one is going up like Monday, September 2nd, isn't it? Or September 1st?
September 1st.
Right.
This so very Monday. September 1st, yeah.
Whoa.
So by the time
so it's a big week for you guys.
Yeah. It's all coming down to the wire.
So by the time most people listen to this, the first episode will already be out. So you guys should totally go watch that, because I've seen the sneak preview and it looked amazing. And I am excited to see the full thing when it is ready.
We will be ready in a few short days.
And if they miss the first episode, they can just wait till the next Monday and there'll be episode two.
Oh my god.
Wait, there's more? Oh my gosh.
We're only $49.95, my friends.
So you survived the first episode. Okay, cool.
Spoilers.
Needless to say.
So you mentioned this was an idea you'd had for a while. How exactly did it go from idea to YouTube video?
I met Jason and he was like, we could totally do this. This is a super easy idea. Because I had this idea a couple years ago because I always intended to go back and watch every episode of the original series, because I've seen episodes here and there, but I've never sat down and watched them all in order.
And that's where the original idea was that Ashley was going to kind of do a vlog series where she reviewed each episode.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it somehow morphed into, well, like, you know, a vlog is kind of like a log you give on Star Trek. What would the logs of a red shirt be? And then what if we saw the episodes through that? And that's how that morphed.
And what if we already had a bunch of props and a bunch of uniforms? Wouldn't that be convenient? And Jason comes from the YouTube world, so he was able to facilitate a lot of stuff like, this is how we build the set with our bare hands, and this is how we light it, and stuff like that I wasn't able to do on my own. So
he brings the technical expertise then.
Yeah, he's the real boss behind it. I'm just the idea girl.
Ideas are important, says the person for the idea for the podcast.
People say that.
And I also believe, Jason, are you you have a role in this show, as I understand it.
I have many roles.
Like nine roles.
Because all the roles.
Determined to... Well, the original joke was going to be that we were only going to see Ensign Williams. He was going to be the only character we saw. And then we were like, well, what if we see other characters? And then wouldn't it be a funny like little inside joke if I played every single character she meets? Obviously, that couldn't happen because we have a really cool friend named Karshina who looks exactly like Uhura. And we were like, we got to have her on there. But I am Captain Kirk.
Evil Kirk.
Evil Kirk. Harry Mudd. Gertrude Sulu Spaceplant. Baylock.
Oh, my gosh.
And
the voice of Dr. Adams at one point.
And the voice of Dr. Adams, yeah.
Wow.
So we couldn't like convince somebody else to play, basically Jason was. And he was going to be Spock for quite a while, but we happened to have someone else around. So we have a separate Spock now.
And so it looked like the format of it is sort of a like a Dr. Horrible style thing, where it's like the conceit is that you are watching this through the video log that the person is taking.
Yep.
Yeah, and also the idea I like to think about it is that there are certain parts where it will fast forward and rewind and skip ahead. And I like to think that it's the admirals or the commodores at Starfleet right. Command sifting through the log.
Trying to find the most important parts.
Yeah.
So we got to wonder what happens to your character further down the line that makes all of this something that they're watching through.
Indeed.
Yeah, maybe that's the selling point we want for season two.
Yeah.
Man, I do kind of want to know what the admirals back at Starfleet Command are thinking as they're reading through these various logs that the Enterprise is sending them. She's like, wait, then they did what?
And
then
they're thinking, I'm really sorry that we left James T. Kirk in charge of all of you.
Well, I always thought on some of the series, you've heard these people like, you know, do their logs, especially more so on. I remember specifically there's this DS9 episode where Miles O'Brien thinks everything is wrong and he starts listening to everybody's logs.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was like, man, somebody somewhere, yeah, does have to listen to these things. And how, like, whose job is it to just sit at the desk and be like, all right, today, Johnson and Jeffrey play, and then 5 hours later be like, all right, that log, because there's no set standard about how long they are or how short they have to be, or
it's the unpaid intern that's the person who filters through and it's like, oh look, there's a space plant here, oh look, there's a naked time here.
I feel like that was probably like, you know, in the 60s, the idea of voice logs probably sounded like a really good idea until someone pointed out, you know, you can't search a voice log. You can't.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's so true.
Wasn't that the problem they had with selling like those audio cassette recorder diaries and everything?
All in the 90s?
Yeah. Did I just give you a blast from the past there?
Oh, my childhood.
Ah, yes.
Right in the 90s. I'm going to go watch Gargoyles.
Yeah.
But if you were in the 90s, Deep Space Nine would be airing live.
Oh, man. That would be pretty days. Cool. Except I was too stupid to like Deep Space Nine back in the 90s.
You are stupid if you don't like Deep Space Nine.
Not me. I was there every episode.
I mean, I love it, but only because in college, a friend of mine went to Thailand and gave me all of his DS9 DVDs, so I was actually able to watch all of them. Like,
do they not have Star Trek in Thailand? Is it banned?
No, I think they just don't have room in their suitcases for like 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine.
You lucked out.
I did. It was a great victory for me because I had never gotten to watch Deep Space Nine really back to back before. I'd dropped in on like occasional episodes and been like, Dominion War, what is?
If it's not really obvious, it's mine and Jason's favorite series.
Well, you guys have good tastes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of how I would like to know, because I like to ask all the guests who come on the show this question, how did you guys get into Star Trek?
So I was 12 and I was coming home from school one day and I was watching Spike TV. Don't know why. That's the channel for men.
Yeah, but there you go. Had all the Star Trek.
Yeah, and they played the original series. They played TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager all back to back to back. And then I saw the arena with the Gorn and I was like, I'm in. I'm totally in for this show. I mean, I'd always known about what Star Trek was. And there were also a lot of people I knew who were doing like online role playing, and they had invited me to play in this Star Trek story, and I was like, I don't know anything about Star Trek. So that impetus also sort of invited me into studying it, into learning as much as I could as fast as possible. So yeah.
So you just threw yourself right into it.
Yeah, I already had, like, people were like, oh, you should be a Vulcan. So I was like, okay, must learn things about Vulcans. And they were like, you should be a medical officer. And I was like, okay, must learn things about doctors. And then that's how Julian Bashir became one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
So you did end up doing, like, online Star Trek role-playing?
I did, but it was text-based. So it was a lot of nerds sitting around, like, writing a collective story.
Did you write Acknowledged a lot?
Well, not really. I wrote a lot of, like, II Captain.
Man,
we're on a standalone ship. It's a different protocol.
I asked because I've done some online role-playing of that sort, so it piqued my interest when you mentioned it.
You've crossed paths.
Probably.
It's not a huge community.
For all we know.
Well, we had a weird thing where, like, I joined, like, an online role-playing that was all on, like, one ship, and I joined right when we were doing a crossover with another group. And it was interesting, except it was supposed to be like they were like a mercenary ship and we were like an outdated Starfleet ship and we were supposed to have like a confrontation, but they kept writing fiction where they would win and we would look like idiots, and we were like, guys, you have to work with us on this. You can't just write that we were stupid and didn't see you for no reason.
I know, but you gotta wrangle all your people at the same time and you're all in different countries and it's so difficult.
Yeah, so
they just
yelled
death to the opposition and moved on.
So Jason, what about you? How did you get into Star Trek?
Well, I come from a very small town in the middle of nowhere, Kansas. And I remember back in 87, there was this news report. And the news report had these people, and they were out in the, on the street, and they were interviewing people in like the mall. And they were like, what do you think about the new Star Trek that's coming out? What do you think about the new Star Trek that's coming out? And they did this big, long report. And then they ended the newscast with like, and Star Trek The Next Generation's pilot episode starts now. And I watched. And ever since then, I watched every Trek series live to air, and I was at every midnight opening. So from Encounter at Farpoint on, I have been with Star Trek.
So you've got history there.
You committed early on.
It was a weird thing. It was on like Saturday nights where I lived, and since I was in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, and there was no internet, there's nothing to do, and... The idea of a starship that could do anything and go anywhere was very appealing to my little kid self. And
you saw Commander Riker and you told your little kid self, I'm going to grow up to be that guy. And it Jason looks like Riker on TNG. It's not even a lie.
Yeah, he does a bit. I'm looking at this picture of him right here.
Yeah, I do.
Do you sit down on chairs the same way where you put your leg over the back of the chair and then like do the mannerisms?
I've tried, but it leads to a lot of injuries in the groin area.
Oh, darn.
But you also you have the beard going, which is a good choice whenever you are, you know, consulting the Riker. You know, it's always go with the beard Riker.
It is a life goal of mine to go to a convention with him someday wearing an ugly sweater and bring an ugly sweater for him and make him get in a family pose of me and take a family picture.
I mean, you get one of those sweaters that Wesley wore. It'd be great. It would all...
Oh, my God, yes.
Yep. All right, there it is.
We've just gotten your 5-year plan for you. You have your marching orders.
I know where my career is going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, we are making all kinds of accomplishments today on this podcast. Now, since this is an interview with the people who are behind the Redshirt Diaries, I thought it was only appropriate to have a couple of Redshirt-related talking points.
Okay.
First of all, I think we should establish that although the later series, the dying security officers typically would wear gold, I think they could be considered honorary red shirts.
Absolutely.
Tasha Yar was totally a red shirt.
Oh, yes. My God.
Tasha Yar, I was later going to ask what you think the most memorable red shirt death is. I suppose you could say Tasha Yar.
Okay, so not counting Tasha Yar. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, we can think about that one. So... Just off the top of your head, what series do you think is most dangerous for red shirts? Like, is it TOS?
I think it has to be TOS.
Okay.
I think Enterprise could give it a run for its money if they'd had the same showrunners, just because they're a lot less used to where they are and what they're doing. But I actually don't think a ton of people die in it. I think for bang for your buck, it's got to be TOS.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, because on TNG... Well, on TNG, a lot of times you don't really get the extraneous, no-name, non-speaking person. You get, like, Geordi, Data, and Worf, or you get a certain team with known people, so it's like, you know, they're not going to die.
Yeah, right?
See, I was actually going to say Voyager. I think Voyager might be. Now, I don't know if numerically if it can stack up, but I always feel like there's always all these Voyager episodes that start with main character and red shirt in a shuttle. Shuttle crashes, red shirt dies.
Well, like Voyager does also take a lot of damage, which it, you know, miraculously very quickly recovers from.
It's probably fine.
Of the most of any of the series.
That's true. And Voyager also has, like, I mean, even in, like, the Year of Hell, where they have the, you know, the consoles that explode and I think rocks come out, that always struck me as odd.
Although, why do they keep them filled with rocks? It doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I'm not actually
sure
where
the replicators malfunctioned.
So rocks.
It's just replicating rocks.
I guess the computers are made of like bio goo. Maybe the walls are made of rocks.
You know what? I'd have been smarter if they did a joke if like the console exploded and out came tomato soup. And Tom Paris was like, that's a recall to the pilot.
Except Tom Paris would be like, they still didn't get it right. Because that's, yeah. I think that's the joke, is they can never get the recipe right. Mm-hmm.
No, tomato soup, far too complicated for replicators. You can make, like, literally anything, but not tomato soup. No, sir.
Yeah, Ractigino, no problem. Tomato soup, I don't think so.
You know, I always wanted there to be a Star Trek episode where they did, like, a blind taste test for replicator food. Because you have those people in Star Trek who are always saying that replicated food doesn't taste the same. And I'm like, I feel like you guys are being food snobs. Like, would you
so you're basically pitching a crossover with Hell's Kitchen.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
You need Gordon Ramsay in space.
I didn't know that's
Ramsay
what I
played Ramsay. Chef on Enterprise.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
So I think that would be a fantastic idea. Now, so you've had a few seconds to think. What do you guys think for you is your most memorable red shirt death?
All right. Now I while we were all talking, I Googled this just to make sure I could name this guy's name. Mm-hmm. Now he's not technically a red shirt, but there is one death that has always stood out to me more than any death in Star Trek, and it's a man by the name of Lieutenant Branson.
Oh, and I didn't know this one.
He is the helmsman in Nemesis, and when the screen gets blown open, when Shinzon blows open the view screen, he's the guy that gets sucked out, and they hold on him, and he's like, ah! And you're just like, man, Starfleet sucks.
Yeah, man.
But yep. death by hole in the view screen, I think, has to be up there.
Mine is probably, and I don't know this red shirt's name because I didn't cheat and look it up on the internet while we were having a discussion.
But in
What Are Little Girls Made Of, Rock, the big giant guy who later goes on to play Lurch, takes a red shirt and flings him into a never-ending chasm of death before he fights Captain Kirk. And that, to me, was always the, like, laugh-out-loud funniest red shirt death.
That one is pretty funny.
Just that, well, get this guy out of the way moment.
Especially, yeah.
Well, what you don't know is that chasm is actually unending, and he's still alive.
Oh, I was going to say that they didn't want to pay him for a full day's work under SAG, so for $50 they were like, we'll throw you off this cliff, okay? You'll be in Star Trek.
See, I think for me it has to be, this isn't a specific death, but in The Apple, which is the one where they go down to the planet with the feeders of Vol, and, like, this giant computer which is named Vol, and, like, everything on that planet kills you. Like, there's exploding rocks, and, like, dart shooting poison.
Isn't that
plants.
Also, sorry for interrupting, isn't that also the episode where Kirk is like, Scotty, detach the saucer from the main section? Doesn't he order that in that? I want to say he's like saucer separation Scotty in that episode.
Maybe you're crazy.
Oh, I'm gonna cheat and look it up.
You know, the way I recall it is that the saucer separation was something that was in Roddenberry's original pitch. I don't think it was ever mentioned on screen in TOS, but I could be wrong. But what I remember specifically about that episode is that they beam down with like 50 red shirts. They have like so many guys when they beam down. It's like the biggest landing party I've ever seen. And they just continuously lose people because they don't, like, you know, stop to do things cautiously. They're just like, oh, that red shirt stepped on an exploding rock. Well, that's sad. Let's keep going.
I can't wait till we get to that episode on the Red Shirt Diaries and we can kill all of our friends.
Okay, so I was mistaken from my super nerd Star Trek days. Yeah. Apparently the original script of The Apple called for a saucer separation, but they deemed that they didn't have enough budget to do it.
Yeah, that's what I recall, is that they were like, man, it would be cool if we could do this, but let's not. And then they held off for a while, and then they were like, Next Generation, $1 million an episode? Yeah, we can probably do a saucer separation.
And then they only did it three times.
Yeah,
hey, they were paying that British dude a lot of money. Well, what do you want?
It's expensive. I mean, I think the saucer separation kind of goes along with Voyager's ability to land, in that it's something that they really should have, you know, logically, they should have used it more often, but it was too expensive. So
yeah, totally.
It's like, you know, one of those things, maybe you shouldn't give your ship an ability that you can't afford to film.
Also, Voyager's nacelles going up and down for no reason.
Eh, well.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It's to show that they do something, I guess.
I guess someone thought they wanted a more dynamic-looking ship, so they're like, what if the nacelles moved? Mm-hmm. I mean,
because Star Wars ships move. Because
yeah,
Star Wars has a lot of those, like, useless moving parts of your spaceship.
Yeah, you gotta block the S-foils in attack position. You know how it is.
Yeah, totally.
Although Deep Space Nine had a similar problem with Odo, especially in the early seasons, because if
don't
you notice,
you talk bad about Odo.
I love Odo, he's great, but there are so many scenes where they're having like a fight, and Odo could end the fight any time by like stretching out some tentacles, but instead he just kind of stands there with his arms crossed, and there are some clearly some scenes where they just couldn't afford to have him shapeshift, and so he just so you know he just stood there.
Well, I don't know how turning into a picture frame in the hallway is much good in a fight. That's a lot of what he does in the first season.
Turn into a mouse, he does that. Turns into a bag once, I thought that was fun.
He's a glass in one episode.
Oh, that's right.
I always thought it would be...
And at one point he's a tray, just a waiter's tray.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
How heavy a tray would that have to be, though, for Odo to compact to that size?
Oh, man, that's like a Transformers question. Like, do you...
How would a waitress carry that tray?
Oh, this is too highbrow nerd stuff for me.
I will into Transformers debates with you. The time arrives.
The question of does Odo follow the rules of conservation of mass is always something that has been hotly debated. It seems not, because when he turns into a mouse, he's not like a 185-pound mouse. At least it doesn't seem like it.
There actually is a bigger mystery with Odo, and I actually pointed this out to Ashley when we started watching Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah?
How does Odo's communicator work if it's part of his body?
My contribution to this discussion was, do you think he has body odor? So, Jason is clearly the smarter of the two of us.
It would be really creepy if he didn't, though. He'd just be like some weird odorless goo that hangs out.
I know, right? Because they were talking about pheromones. So I was like, do you think Odo smells? Very philosophical.
I always imagine he would smell kind of like a gelatin. You know, maybe like maybe add some cherry flavoring to him. You know, spicy.
Yeah.
Lime cherry Odo.
Only three strips of latinum at your local promenade.
Well, I'm glad we arrived at that.
Yeah.
So, are there any episodes that you think the red shirts were treated better than average, where they got more to do than just die, to fall off a cliff or what have you?
That's really interesting, because in TOS, they mostly just die.
Yeah, just a little bit.
In the Mantrap, they get to go down and do a bit of exploring on the planet before they die. Like, they get that horrible disease, and then they die. So, like, it's kind of cool to see they actually give them names. Like, one is called Green, and we call him back in our first episode. And I don't know, what else did they get to
do?
Well,
the only one that comes into my head is, and this is, you know, when they're yellow shirts, is in Deep Space Nine, there's that episode where they first meet Weyoun, and it's all about the Guardians portals.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And you know, they train with the Jem'Hadar, and you see a lot of extra security guys, and then a lot of them get killed by the Jem'Hadar, so at least they get to get in a couple good punches before they're stabbed by a Jem'Hadar.
Enterprise kind of takes that up, too, where they're trying to teach... combat training to a bunch of civilians, and you get to see a lot of just sort of not maybe red stripes in Enterprise, but you get to see a lot of just auxiliary crewmen like helping and training and preparing these people for an inevitable disaster. So maybe later seasons.
Yeah, I was gonna say Enterprise even kind of introduces the super red shirts in season 3 when they have the Makos. They have like the super red shirts. They have advanced scope technology. That was my favorite part about the Makos. They were like, they have advanced technology your guys don't have. And the first thing
we all know, let's be honest here, we all know that was the Super Nintendo Super Scope.
Yeah.
Just repainted.
I was really hoping you were going to say, we all know that nobody likes the Makos. That's what I took away from this episode.
I didn't. It's true that no one on the Enterprise seems to like the Makos. I actually I liked Hayes. The name Makos kind of bothered me. I thought that was a little bit pretentious. So just call them Marines already. They're Marines on a spaceship.
They're Space Marines. They need a whole new name.
They need like this. You know,
they
kind
can
of
never
big...
just be Space Marines, can they?
No.
Like like military assault command or operatives or something. I think is what Makos.
Yeah, with the shark on it.
Yeah,
with the shark on their badge.
It really feels like the people at Starfleet were like, man. Makos are cool. We should name our thing Mako. And it's like, you can't just name it Mako. And they're like, well, we'll come up with something that is an abbreviation for.
It's just like S.H.I.E.L.D. They were like, man, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s such a good name.
Let's force an acronym into this.
Let's force an acronym.
Apparently NASA does that all the time. Like, at least...
Wouldn't
totally
you if you were NASA, though?
At least if Neil deGrasse Tyson is to be believed, they're always like...
Which
you know,
he is.
Yeah, I do love Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now, I was going to say, what I always thought was that I thought Deep Space Nine in general did a pretty good job of, I don't even know if they qualify as red shirts anymore in Deep Space Nine, because there's a lot of episodes where the secondary cast and then even the extras, I feel like, get a lot more development. Like, you have the Siege of AR-558, which I know you guys are doing a rewatch right now, so you probably aren't I don't know how long it's been since you've seen that episode. But it's the one where they are on this, like, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's the last season. That's the episode where, spoilers, even though it's 20 years late, yeah, where Nog loses his leg.
Yes, it is. But in that episode, yeah, it's very sad, and they have a great follow-up to it in It's Only a Paper Moon.
Yep, it's a great episode.
But that episode I thought was good for a number of reasons, but one of them is that the, you know, even like the various like Starfleet soldiers who don't get a lot of screen time, they still, most of them get names and they all get like some dialogue. So, you know, I thought that was kind of cool.
There's another one too where they, I think it's during the sixth season, during the Dominion War arc, where they crash on that one planet and they're stuck, and they're fighting on the desert between the Jem'Hadar, and they're both stuck. And
right. I love that episode.
And there's a couple no name like yellow shirt people, and I remember Sisko talks a lot to them and asks them about their lives and stuff like that.
But Deep Space Nine too is inherently so different than the other seasons because you're building a community, you're not kind of going on adventures as often and doing the monsters of the week. So there, I think there's just less opportunity, even amongst the danger that they're presented with, to kill people off in what feels like a very willy nilly fashion.
Right, because it's sort of like you would notice that they were gone the next week.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is actually true, but I felt like on Deep Space Nine that we would see the same, you know, background characters more often. I don't know 100%.
You do. I noticed it once because a lot of the background actors, because, you know, it was filmed in Los Angeles, are Caucasian. There's an African-American background actor who is security in various different scenes throughout the first season.
He's a Bajoran. He's one of Odo's Bajoran guards.
Right. And I was like, oh, hey, he was there when they were fighting Rumpelstiltskin, and he is back now.
Well, and of course, there also is the greatest background actor of them all, Morn.
I was really hoping you were going to say him.
Morn.
He's, I believe, in almost every episode of Deep Space Nine, save for like one or two or three.
Like the away missions?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but who mourns for Morn? That's the real question.
It wouldn't be DS9 without Morn, honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, like, Morn is probably in more episodes than Jake, now that I think about it.
I think he is, especially once the war happens.
Yeah. And I also thought, back on TNG, they have the episode The Lower Decks, which is kind of an episode about red shirts, even though they're wearing all different color shirts.
And isn't there a Voyager episode where Janeway, like, goes to that weird deck where they're hiding in that room, and she's like, come on the Delta Flyer with me, weirdos?
It's the The Good Shepherd, which is not as good as The Lower Decks, but I mean, it's still, it's a passable episode.
Not as good as the title would suggest.
I see what you did.
Well, they couldn't
call
it The Mediocre Shepherd. That would just be giving too much away at the beginning.
The Adequate Shepherd.
The Nobody Died This Week Shepherd.
Yeah.
We really just weren't going so good without coffee, Shepard.
Yeah, totally.
Well, there is coffee in that nebula. It turned out there wasn't coffee in that nebula, though. It was a lie. It was a terrible coffee-based lie.
Janeway cared more about coffee than her own crew sometimes. That's what I found out about Voyager.
Yeah, well, the thing about Voyager is that it's a writer's issue where their stories are so inconsistent, and like with Janeway as the captain, she kind of her decisions have to drive the story. So it's like one week the story depends on Janeway not caring about the Prime Directive, and then another week it depends on Janeway caring about only the Prime Directive and nothing else. So she seems really inconsistent. Or at least that was my takeaway from it.
Yep.
All right. So, I think it is time to break from this discussion to have a bit of red shirt based trivia.
Dun dun dun.
Okay, so, you guys, these are the rules. First, you will be divided into two teams. I will not be on either team because I made these questions, and therefore I hopefully know the answers.
Hopefully.
So
you're just trying to divide us, man.
I am. So these teams will be David and Grace for the All Things Trek team, and then
what
Jason and Ashley. was like,
dang,
that's
dang it. I wanted to be on the other team.
Jason,
I'll trade you, dude.
And so then they will be, of course, be the Redshirt Diaries team. There will be a series of questions. I will, when I ask them, the first team to say redshirt is basically your buzzword, and then you get a chance. Okay. then you get a chance to answer it. And if you cannot answer it, it will be given. The other team will get a chance. And each question is worth 2 points. Each question also will have a bonus, which will go to whoever, you know, didn't get it, and then that bonus will be worth 1 point. So you have a chance to make up some points if the other team gets it before you.
Okay.
All right. Is everyone ready? Everyone knows mm-hmm. what your buzzword is if you think you know the answer?
Sure.
Yes.
All right. So, and for the most part, I'm trying not to be like, you need to know the specific name of this thing. So usually I'll accept, like, you know, plot synopsis or a general description of something in place of a name.
So we can give that one guy as a name then.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
that okay. One guy. You might need a little more specific than that, but all right.
Yeah, the guy with the face and the stuff.
All right, so for this next one, I will, as I said, I will accept either a name or a fairly accurate plot synopsis. In what episode is the first female wearing a red uniform killed?
Red shirt.
Oh, David, what do you got?
Episode title, right?
Yes.
By any other name?
Ooh, that's a good one. And do you want to remind the listeners what happens in that episode?
That's the one where the robotic looking people, they dehydrate the two crewmen and turn them into like a big giant D&D 20-sider dice, and then he crushes one of them, right?
Oh. And it's actually the black guy who survives and the cute girl who dies.
I know, what's the
opposite of a horror movie.
Right?
Okay. So I was, I shouldn't have asked you that, David, because the bonus was going to be, the bonus that I was going to give the other team was, how did she die? But you just answered that. So, new bonus for the other team. In what way, in this episode, what new and exciting way did Spock use the mind meld?
I don't know.
We got nothing.
We got nothing?
Said
okay.
I'm going to go with, he used it to tell Kirk about his deep-seated erotic feelings for him. That might just be pandering to the Tumblr crowd. I haven't decided yet.
Okay,
you know,
well,
they know we love them.
Yeah.
All right, well, that would earn you a million honorary points, but in this game, it does not earn you any actual points, because what
just like internet money.
Was
he, like bitcoins.
He used his power through a wall to knock out a Kelvin.
Wow.
Yeah, the mind meld was pretty big this episode. All right, so I'm going to mark some points down here for the ATT crowd with 2 points. And for anyone listening, Grace and David did not see these questions. I did not show them because I am a fair trivia master. Okay.
He's a fair but harsh captain.
Yeah.
Mainly just harsh, really. Okay.
Yeah, well.
So
I was trying to butter you up a little, but I guess that didn't work.
No promotion for you.
Dang it.
Okay, so this next question is, what different departments do the red shirts indicate in the TOS and TNG eras? Because, and I'll clarify that question, because in the TOS eras, the red shirts...
But red shirt.
Say what now?
I was going to say, but red shirt.
Oh, but red shirt? Okay, you got it. You got an answer?
I was going to say security and engineering.
All right, that is correct for TOS, and what do they represent in TNG?
Oh, shit. Command and...
That's good. That is actually...
Yep.
Okay.
Well, Worf technically was strategic.
He was on the command track.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But for some reason, the helmsman wears red.
He was
red.
Born to lead.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, they do. Okay.
I was always confused why the helmsman wears red, and I still don't know the answer to that.
In case your view screen blows open and you fly out.
Obviously.
Branson!
So it looks more dramatic.
All right, so now you guys have 2 points, but hang on, for the All Things Trek crowd, you guys get the potential for a bonus. What character started off wearing red and ended up wearing gold? There are two potential answers to this question.
Red shirt.
No, this is for them. This is for the ATT crowd. This is the bonus point. All right, Grace, what do you got?
Worf.
Actually, that is incorrect.
Richard.
All right, you guys can steal it.
It's the other way around.
Geordi.
Yes. That is...
Dang it!
Actually, wait, no, hang on. Hang on, no, Grace is actually right. Because he started wearing red in the first season, and then he put on yellow, and then he put on red again. But I'm giving you guys both a point for that.
Yay!
All right, so you guys are tied 3-3. All right.
Okay. It's getting intense here.
This is the best kind of intense. All right, question 3. In the episode...
Kind where there's nothing actually at stake.
Yeah.
In the episode Encounter at Farpoint, what terrible fate befell the redshirt helmsman?
Redshirt.
Yeah, what you got, David?
Oh, wait, I think I might be thinking of a different one. But I'm thinking of the one where the black guy in the red shirt gets frozen to death, and the guy's like, just froze him just to experiment with humans. Like, oh, corporeal, oh, they could die. I'm going to freeze them to death.
But well, now I'm thinking you are about mixing your episodes, but you are correct. The red shirt was frozen.
Oh, okay.
Was that by the cage? The Q cage?
Yes, that was by Q.
Half points?
No. Move Q.
I did ask for what happened to him, and he was frozen. That was correct. Now,
yeah, he's right.
Now for the other team, for Redshirt Diaries team, your bonus point is why did Q freeze the helmsman who was a redshirt?
Did he go for his phaser?
That is correct. He went for his phaser. Okay.
Yay.
All right. 2 points for ATT. 1 point for RSD.
In the lead.
Okay. All right. Question 4. In the Abrams movie, how did the first redshirt from the Enterprise die?
Redshirt.
Yeah, David?
He fell off that big drill, the big space sky drill thing.
I need something more specific than that.
He was skydiving and didn't land right.
Hang on. Actually, you guys answered incorrectly.
Olsen?
You were partially correct, but there was a specific way in which he died that I'm looking for here.
Wait!
It's the other guy's turn now. It's Jason and Ashley's turn now.
He was incinerated by the drill.
He was burned up by the drill.
That is correct.
Okay.
All right. And
you should give him half a point. You should give David half a point, though.
I will give David a point, and also the ATT. They get the first chance at the bonus. What vital piece of equipment was the redshirt carrying when he was incinerated?
Oh, what was that thing?
He was carrying some kind of thing.
The thing they were like the bomb to destroy the drill.
That was it. He was carrying the explosives. Yeah. That was why they had to shoot a bunch of stuff instead because they couldn't blow it up. Okay. Right. Currently, the score is ATT with 7 and RSD with 6.
Don't give the red shirt the explosives.
It's just a bad idea in general.
Or always give the red shirts the explosives.
Oh, that's true.
Because if it explodes...
That's a good point. If there's explosives around, you probably want not to be the one.
Either way, it's
a
no-win scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is...
Good thing we don't believe in them.
This is our final question. And in the movie Star Trek Into Darkness, before it was revealed that Benedict Cumberbatch was playing Khan, he is referred to...
Can we get you to repeat the question? You're cutting out on us, sir.
Oh, sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, now we can.
Okay, yes. Now you can hear me. Okay. So, in the movie Star Trek Into Darkness, In the movie Star Trek Into Darkness, Benedict Cumberbatch played the character of Khan. However, before he played the character of Khan, he was referred to as John Harrison. Which team can tell me what this was an obscure reference to in Star Trek, in the original series?
It's
a weird one. Took me a while to figure it out.
I was really hoping you were going to say who was he rumored to play before that.
Well, I was even going to be like, I know his original name was John Erickson, and then they dubbed it over.
That's pretty good. I didn't know that.
He was also supposed to be Gary Mitchell.
There was also some speculation that he might be Gary Mitchell. There were people were talking about Robert April, who is, I don't know who that is, but I think he's a character from, the comics, maybe?
Robert April was the captain before Pike
was
of the Enterprise.
Okay, yep. When does that reveal? Do you know?
I think it was revealed in the animated series.
Okay, yeah, that's probably it. All right, that's it. It's animated series. All right, so do any of you know what John Harrison is a reference to?
No.
Nope.
Okay. So I will reveal
the clockmaker guy from a long, long time ago.
That is not. I will reveal it, and then I will give you guys both a chance at the bonus.
Okay.
So the reveal is that there is a character, a recurring redshirt in TOS, who was referred to in the script as John Harrison.
Oh.
And he is in tons of episodes. I don't believe he is ever actually referred to on screen.
He's no Ensign Kyle.
But yeah. But it was a huge thing. It was a kind of a funny in joke. So both teams will get it.
Not as funny as self sealing stem bolts.
That's true. So both teams can answer this. I want you to name an episode in which Harrison appeared. And there's a lot of them. So if you just like throw a dartboard at TOS, you have a pretty good chance of hitting one.
Red shirt.
Yes, Grace?
The Naked Time.
I was gonna say.
All right. Well, you were correct. He was in The Naked Time. So, bonus point. All right, and then for the other team, do you guys have an episode you want to guess?
Red shirt.
Yes.
Well, it's our turn.
Yes.
I'm playing by the rules.
That's true. Yes.
The Enterprise incident.
You know, I actually don't think he's in that one. Hang on.
Ooh. What the? This game is rigged.
All right, hang on.
I'm surprised you didn't say Corbomite Maneuver.
No, I don't know. Is he in Corbomite Maneuver?
He is in Corbomite Maneuver. I'll go ahead and give that to you.
It's actually my favorite episode.
It's a good one.
So we are now, the score is currently, let me look up here. The score is currently 8-7 with ATT in the lead. However, I will give you guys one unscripted question to try to pull this lead out, if you would like.
Okay, pressure.
And I don't remember the answer, so you guys are going to have to convince me that this is correct.
Okay.
Can anyone tell me, this is more because I personally want to know.
Is this just for them, or is it for both, or for what?
This is for both, whoever can guess it first.
It's gotta be.
You gotta use your buzzword to get it. There is a red shirt who dies in an episode and is then present in a later episode without explanation, and even referred to by the same name. Who is that red shirt? I don't remember.
Ooh, red shirt?
Yes.
I want to say it was Ensign Kyle.
Was it Ensign Kyle? Well, let's find out. Let's see what Memory Alpha has to say about this. Because I
we'll
was...
be the first people to ever give a crap about Ensign Kyle.
Yeah.
Well, the animated series people apparently gave a crap about him, although they'd not for his voice actor. All right, Kyle.
Ouch.
Memory Alpha. Let's see. Does it reference him dying? He was in Wrath of Khan, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let's see here. Background information. You know, I'm not seeing it in here. So
I have no idea.
Okay, so that was kind of a cheating question anyway. But the final scores are 8-7. Congratulations to the home team of David and Grace.
Woo! Yeah!
Come
on! Death to the opposition!
I'll just put tangs in your ears while you sleep.
Ah! Now, all right, so there is no prize for winning this, except that you now know that you are the monarchs of trivia. So, you take that at home.
I already knew that.
Yeah,
sit on your iron throne.
I'm gonna stick that in my pipe and smoke it.
So now that we're done with trivia, here's another question for you. Are there any, do we notice, like, any patterns with any of the non-Starfleet races with red shirts? Like, are there Klingon red shirts? This is something I've always wondered about.
There should be, like, Bajoran pink uniforms, because they die or get beaten up a lot.
Yeah, they're either pink or gray, and there's a lot of gray, and there are a lot of Bajoran deaths in DS9.
Especially when the station is being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
They're always the one getting blown out of, you know, the airlocks, or out of whatever room just got shot and is now depressurized.
Kind of makes you wonder if the Starfleet people assign them to the more dangerous jobs.
Wouldn't you?
Well, we're getting dark here, man. Yeah.
Well, and for the Klingons, they don't wear red, but there's definitely the cannon fodder troops that they basically like. Especially the episode where they are taking over DS9 and they're just running through the promenade and the upper decks, and then they just get slaughtered by the Starfleet crew. It's like you're carrying disruptors and batlets, and yet everybody gets killed by Starfleet. Even Sisko is like punching Klingons and defeating them. So I consider those Klingon red shirts.
The leather
guns are faster than blades.
Yeah, it is kind of funny when they beam onto, in Way of the Warrior, like a bunch of Klingons beam onto the bridge, and they've all got their swords out, and the Starfleet people are just like, we have lasers. We brought lasers to the sword fight, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Step above bringing a gun to a sword fight.
Although it does really bother me, there are a couple of background shots where you see, like, some Klingons fighting some security dudes in hand-to-hand combat. And I'm like, man, that security dude should just be some paste on the wall. I don't buy that Starfleet security dudes can fight Klingons in hand-to-hand combat. I just don't buy it.
Well, you know, I actually think I may have come up with the ultimate Star Trek red shirts. If they can be deemed red shirts.
Oh, yeah?
Borg drones.
Ooh.
Because there's a lot of them that die.
And they're literally drones, so... Yep.
And basically,
there are literally thousands of them.
And, like, there are entire episodes devoted to finding new ways to kill them. That's like, that is really good,
that's
Jason.
Dark!
We're a mature show, Grace. We live on the edge. All right, so do you? I'm out of questions to ask. Do you guys have anything else you want to plug while you're here?
Oh, that's awesome.
We actually probably plug lots of stuff.
Please, if there are any other projects you're working on, feel free.
Red Shirt Season 2.
Well, we can plug real. But there's a question I want to ask everybody. But we can plug real quick. TheRedShirtDiaries.com.
TheRedShirtDiaries.com, or you won't get our website.
Or YouTube.com/Jawin with JAWIIN every Monday for the next 10 weeks. We got hopes for a second season, but that will all determine on how many people watch Season 1.
Yeah.
So. But quick question for the group after the shameless plug. Who do we think, who's the captain that you think could beat the other captains?
What, in like a fist fight?
I think the rules are open with any weapons, strategy, ships available. Let's say the ships are all on equal footing. So there's no, like, you can't, you know, take the Enterprise E versus the NX-01. Because
I would really like to do that, though.
who do you think, just like, in a fist fight or just strategy wise, which captain could beat the other captains in a war game?
Okay, all right. Grace or David?
Sisko.
Sisko? Why Sisko?
You wouldn't be afraid to get dirty.
Okay.
To fight dirty.
All right. David, what do you think?
Well, if it's like, ground combat, I think Sisko, because he punched Q, he punched some Klingons, he's like punchy, and so I think, but then Sisko, I mean...
He's punchy McGee.
If Picard had his fencing foil, that's a whole other story, but...
or his flute.
Or his saddle, because every good horseman has his own saddle. If it was in the ships, I think I might have to give it to Picard, because he's, like, you know, doing it for a long time. Also, he came up with the Picard maneuver, so he could, like, think on his feet and, you know, do some strategy stuff.
All right. I am going to go with Janeway.
Interesting. Why?
Okay, it's because Janeway is an evil mastermind. Like, that's my theory.
That's
after,
pretty true.
After watching Voyager, my theory is that Janeway is an evil mastermind. And that's the only... That if I try to reconcile all of Voyager as being like a continuous show that all takes place in the same universe, the only explanation is that Janeway is manipulating everything behind the scenes to make her look good, and there is nothing she's not willing to do. You know... Like, you know, she will, if by some chance she lost, she would go back in time, because she has no qualms about doing that, and change history and bring back, like, Batmobile armor and, you know, teleporting torpedoes and stuff. And this should not be taken to indicate that Janeway is my favorite captain, not even by a close margin. But I do think that if we are measuring pure, like, you know, not only pure ruthlessness, but also pure desire to win. Because, like, you know, did you see, Sisko got a little...
There's no prize just for being competitive.
Did you see, like, Sisko got a little bit, like, you know, obsessed in, like, the For the Uniform is the episode when, like, when, like, Barclay betrayed... Not Barclay.
No.
Eddington. Yeah, when Eddington betrayed him. But like Janeway
and the
baseball game. But like in episodes like Equinox, like we see Janeway develops vendettas pretty easily. So yeah, I think Janeway would win out in the end.
Nice.
And then
I think
you know,
we have the same answer.
What not is your guys' answer?
No, not Janeway. I would say Archer. Because I think that he would try to outsmart you at first, and then he'd beat the snot out of you.
Huh. And Archer has a temper.
Yeah,
he has a hell of a temper.
But have you noticed that he's really bad at fist fights?
Well, that's network television for you.
But I just mean, if you look at like his record of fist fighting people, he doesn't have a very successful record.
I still think he'd swing those fists until he beat your face in.
That's true. He might
Sisko would land a better punch, but Archer wouldn't stop.
And then Archer would trick you because he'd pick up the remote control and fly that stupid model right in the back of your head.
Yeah, he would.
Or he'd say something really racist, and I'd be like, really, Archer? That's really racist. And while I was being consternated, he would hit me
Or he'd try to tell you the story of a gazelle. You'd fall asleep, and while you're asleep, he'd punch you right in the face.
Like,
or he would just mesmerize you with those caterpillar eyebrows.
No, well, not the eyebrows.
I think I want to change my answer. I'm going to say Kirk. Not necessarily because of Kirk, but because Kirk has Scotty, and Scotty is the miracle worker. He'll take nuts and bolts out of your ship, so your warp won't work. He'll beam tribbles over to your ship. So I think Scotty wins it.
Scotty's the miracle worker, but I suddenly imagine Scotty teaching Helen Keller for a second there.
I'm teaching Geordi. Let's keep this all in canon.
There you go.
Huh.
It has a name! Water! It has a name!
Okay. Well, I'm sure that we're probably all going to hell because of that, but, you know.
Well, probably.
Well, Gressor, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. So that was a good question, Jason. I like
that. We're going first class.
I found that question, like, will tell a lot about a person's personality with who they choose.
Well,
I do have one final question for you guys from me.
Go ahead, Grace.
Okay. Are you at all worried that with a name like the Red Shirt Diaries, you're at all possibly going to get mixed up with the Red Shoe Diaries?
You know, that may or may not have been the intention.
that kind of diary show.
Well, there is an episode called The Naked Time. And when you see the thumbnail for that, while it is still PG-13, I think you'll know what I mean.
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow.
It actually
now
like
all got something to look forward to.
Yeah, the name was the initial idea for the name. It just kind of like dropped into our heads, and I think I did bring that up where I was like, but we thought that we're like, well, it actually does nothing but help us because people will be like, it's a playful. Oh, got it. And plus, you know, most people, you know, I think you have to be a certain age to remember that show by now. I think.
What are you saying, Jason?
I'm saying I'm old. That's what I'm saying. And I watched scary movies with David Duchovny in them.
All right, so before we leave, since we're asking each other fun questions, I've
nice
got
moving
one.
Along there, Mr.
Yeah,
I've got one for you guys, which is what is, and I think I know the answer for Grace and David, but maybe they'll surprise me. What is your favorite ship from Star Trek?
Ooh,
Deep Space Nine doesn't count. We all love Deep Space Nine, but it's not a ship.
You mean I can't? Oh wait, the solar sail, the Bajoran solar sail. Does that count?
Oh man,
totally.
It does count, but
yes,
I may have to disqualify you.
I thought you meant the whole entire show, but you meant the station, right?
Yeah. I'm.
Well,
I'm
but there's
I'm
that episode
the
that they used it one time and they never used it again, where they put the bubble around the station and then the station could like fly around. Remember that?
Look, I can throw my car in the water. That doesn't make it a boat.
Okay, so I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead.
And...
We're all taking a minute to think, I think.
Well, I double-checked with Jason because I didn't want to say the same thing and get accused of copying him. So I'm going to take the non-conventional route, and I'm going to say every shuttlecraft, shuttle pod, or runabout, because there's inevitably an episode during that season where two characters who don't like each other very much get stuck on that, and then they're going to die, and all the power is going out, or they have no food, or they can't communicate with their, you know, parental ship. And I always like those episodes because you get to watch the characters learn and develop and come to appreciate each other. And it's sometimes, as was the case when it's Trip and Malcolm, it really taught me how to appreciate a character that I'd never appreciated before. So I'm going to say all the little auxiliary shuttle craft that they have on all the different ships.
we wouldn't be able to trap two characters in a space elevator without them.
Nope.
Turbo lift not really up to the task.
No, but honorable mention.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite among those small crafts? Like, there's lots of different ones. The captain's yacht, the runabout, Delta Flyer.
Yeah, I'm going to go specifically with the Rio Grande because Deep Space Nine.
Good choice, good choice. Jason, you got anything for us?
My choice is the choice that Ashley was originally going to say, and she whispered in my ear and asked me. But this has been a favorite of mine, primarily because... again, I watched the new Star Trek series live to air. I went back and rewatched the movies, and there was a certain aesthetic to how starships were designed. You know, the saucer section, the neck, the body, the nacelles, and there were variations on that, but they all generally looked the same until one ship, and that is the little ship that could, the Defiant.
Yeah.
And I love that ship because it's the tough little ship that could, and I always loved that they were like, this ship has way too much power, and Chief O'Brien was always complaining about it, and everything about it seemed like a submarine, and it was so tight, and I just loved the look of it, and also, too, it was like the first time, I think, in Star Trek that I started noticing that, you know, because in old TNG, it was like, and TOS, and primarily because of special effects, a ship would be on the same plane, they'd be staring right at each other, but like... You saw the Defiant actually like move around like a plane, an airplane would, like all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And that was neat.
Well, I mean,
you have to see maneuverability.
Yeah, and cloaking device. And I mean, there's that one episode, Starship Down, I think it's called, which basically just is a submarine. Like they fly into a gas giant and, you know, do submarine warfare, which is a pretty good episode.
And then there's the one where they shrink down another ship and go around inside the ship.
Honey, I Shrunk the Runabout.
Pretty much, yeah.
No. I forget what that episode is called, but it's a good...
One Little Ship, I think.
I won't go so far as to say it's good, but it's at least funny.
Yeah.
Grace, you got anything for us?
Well, purely for the advantages of its dramatic interior lighting, the USS Excelsior.
Excelsior! Which version, specifically? Because there's the one in Star Trek 3 and the one in Star Trek 6.
The one in Star Trek 6, because they just have the dramatic lighting just randomly in there. And it's like, that's not good for the bridge of a ship, but, you know, it kind of... It just looks...
that ship has a distinct advantage, because it has a young Tuvok serving on it.
I love Tuvok!
Yeah.
And also, he will bring. Apparently, he is the one behind Sulu's, personal tea delivery with his, like, you know, his really fragile china set.
Well, it's a ship that also comes with personalized china, apparently. So.
And personalized Vulcans.
Everyone gets their own Vulcan on board.
And Christian Slater.
Yeah, and Christian Slater was there.
Ooh, young Christian Slater.
All right,
so we've got a ship here that's got dramatic lighting, personalized china, Tuvok, and the dude from Heathers. What more could we want?
Oh, I had thought of Heathers as soon as it brought him up.
Well, let me tell you, we're overlooking one important advantage of the Star Trek III Excelsior, which is that its bridge was so big that if you felt like it, you could like play a game of tennis on the bridge if you were bored.
It was the holodeck during off hours.
And also the mustache of that captain.
And his swagger stick. That's what that little thing.
Well, yeah, he had the riding crop.
Swagger stick. Yes.
Well, technically, that's called a swagger stick. I found that out. It's an actual like thing that like British and American officers would carry during World War II and before that. Not so popular anymore. But it really it does nothing. It serves no purpose. It's just a stick that he has. Like it was originally for like hitting unruly men, but theoretically, I would think Starfleet would frown on that.
Kirk would kick.
It was just an accessory,
everyone.
I guess.
It's true. All right, David, you got a favorite ship for us?
Wow, so many. I definitely love me some Klingon ships. And I remember hearing it was kind of sad and weird and mind-blowing that the original Bird of Prey was supposed to be a Romulan ship, the iconic Klingon Bird of Prey. They're like, nope, let's make it a Klingon. So I love that ship. I love the Klingon D7/Katinga. That's just a classic ship. But I know this may sound weird, but I'm going to have to go with the Galaxy-class starship. I just love that ship.
Okay.
And especially my favorite is the Enterprise-D of the Galaxy-class. I just love the D. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
It's a fun ship. And hey, if it ever gets decommissioned, you can turn it into a hotel.
Yep. And separate it.
Just willy-nilly.
All right. Well, anyone who's listening knows that my favorite ship is the Ambassador class, and it will always be the Ambassador class. Mainly just because I think it looks cool, and it had Captain Garrett, who was awesome. So, you know, I'm a shallow person. I like shallow things. But but thank you to both of you for coming on to our show and talking
thank
about...
Thank you for having us.
Yes, it was excellent. Mm. You guys were a great time. You have participated in the first ever All Things Trek trivia contest.
Nice.
I know I seemed super organized and put together. I did not there. But that was because I have never done this before. So you guys, this was a first-time event. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Huzzah.
And everyone listen to their show. First episode's coming out on Monday the 1st. You probably will already be out by the time you're listening to this. And until next time, this will be All Things Trek, signing off.